Federal News Radio in a Web 2.0 world. Find Federal News Radio on Facebook and Twitter. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/FedNewsRadio or join the Federal News Radio group on Facebook. Chat with our team and make connections with others in the federal arena. Email us at fnrcomment@federalnewsradio.com. Visit our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
Newsmakers on In Depth with Francis Rose.
Todd Grahams is the Acting Assistant Secretary for Management and the Chief Financial Officer at the Department of Veterans Affairs.
It used to be that the three business units, cemeteries, healthcare, and benefits, did their own capital infrastructure planning, and we'd have three distinct lists of priorities. With our work over the past 18 months, we are now able to produce, using a consistent process, a list of projects every year that's integrated across the department.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/in-depth.
Did you know federalnewsradio.com offers specialized news feeds just for your agency? Find the agency news page at federalnewsradio.com, search term agency news.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
This is Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Every week, speaker, consultant Mark Amtower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. Amtower Off-Center with your host, Mark Amtower.
Welcome to our no-holds-barred forum for discussing what's good, bad, ugly, and just plain silly in the arena of doing business with our favorite uncle. I'm Mark Amtower. My guests today are David Powell, COO of the Federal Business Council, and Kerry Ray, who is president of GovEvents. Welcome to both of you.
Hi, Mark. Glad to be back. Thank you for having me.
Hi, Mark. Good to be here.
Hey, Kerry. It's your first time in, so I'm going to ask you first. Tell us a little bit about Kerry Ray, your background, and a little bit about GovEvents, please.
Okay. I was introduced to the government IT world probably about 10 years ago. And in that time, I was the VP of marketing for two large value-added resellers. And one of the things that our team always struggled with was finding the right events to attend, not only for us, but for our vendor partners. So really kind of a silly off-the-cuff comment of wouldn't it be nice to be able to find all government events in one place? GovEvents was born from that.
Okay, cool. David, tell us a little bit about you and FBC, please.
Well, Mark, FBC is an event producer in the industry or in the government marketplace, and we've been around since 1976 producing events in the space, and probably one of the companies that Kerry was trying to find when she was the VP of marketing at one of those VARs. But we produce a few hundred events every year, mission-specific events in the space, and basically, we help bring the markets together. So the government side of the equation to the industry side of the equation, we bring them together in context-specific venues to discuss policy, technique, technology, and new products, new procedures, and so forth.
And get really, traction.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
And there you go. So, dear listener, if you haven't figured it out, this is going to be an event-driven show. Our third guest who could not make it today sent us some notes, Lisa DeZutti of Market Connections. You can find Lisa at marketconnectionsinc.com. But in some of the notes that she said, this is from her 2011 media study on trade shows. Market Connection research shows that at least 80% of govies attend some type of conference, seminar, not just trade shows, some event every year, 80%. And over 40% of senior execs attend between one and three events each year. So starting with that that tidbit from Lisa, let's talk about the breadth and depth of events. You know, I spoke at FOSSE a month or two back, and it's not the FOSSE I remember from the 90s, but it's still there. And, you know, we're talking, what, 35, 36 years later.
Years.
So The big trade show is still there. What else is there out there?
Well,
let's ask Carrie because she's got the yeah, de facto list of every event in the marketplace. So let's ask her.
There is a little bit of everything. Webcasts, webinars, your conferences, your expos, your summits, your agency trade shows, you know, in agency where you actually go there. Breakfasts, networking, job fairs are huge. We are really seeing a huge upswing in job fair events. So
yeah,
those are big.
On LinkedIn, I see a tremendous amount of job fair activity.
Mm-hmm.
Seems to be three or four producers.
Right, right. And I like you said, with Fosse, I think one of the reasons Fosse, at least this year, was timing, July. That's bad.
I don't believe that was her first choice.
No, it was not. It was not. And I know that they're moving back to the spring again next year. So really, I mean, it's anything you can imagine, even the event you were talking about that you did last night.
Mm-hmm.
It's all over the board. So.
Before we got on, we talked about an event that David and I are involved in the Maryland Tech Corridor over at UMBC, Cyber Maryland and Cyber T. You want to talk about that for a sec?
Sure, sure. It was a very theme-specific event wrapped around the cybersecurity theme in Maryland. And Maryland is structured to become the epicenter, if it isn't already, the epicenter for cybersecurity in the country, with the real critical mass of cybersecurity activity happening in Maryland. There is a real nexus of activity. So a lot of companies are extremely interested in Maryland as a marketplace and as a place where research and activity happens. So there's a lot of question about the marketplace. There's a lot of consolidation of the marketplace that's happening right now. So the state of Maryland is actually putting some significant effort around bringing that marketplace together. So the event last night was contextually wrapped around bringing the players of the marketplace together so that we could start to unify the marketplace and really structure the marketplace so it understands itself. And that's part of the cybersecurity market in general, really is at a state where it's evolving to the point where it's getting some structure. And so as Maryland evolves as a cybersecurity marketplace, those types of events are going to emerge. And as business opportunities come out of it, we'll start to see more of that. But that's what that event was last night.
Yeah, and a lot of that centers on the consolidation of certain activities at Fort Meade.
Correct, correct. And DISA coming up from Northern Virginia to Maryland, Cyber Command, NSA, they're all right there at Fort Meade. So it does represent a significant amount of that specific marketplace. So it does drive a lot of activity. And
okay.
It is in Maryland, so it's significant. But in terms of types of events, Mark, and you asked about what's going on out there, the events that FBC is involved in tend to be mission related. So for us, it's theme based. It's all contextual. So the content tends to be matched to the theme. So the market and the community that's around that specific content tends to already exist. And then the event is really just the place where the people in that marketplace get together. So it's a different flavor than the generalized events that are out there. But it is definitely a type of event, and we see solid activity.
Well, yeah. One example of that is the events for DHS that you did for the Eagle contract.
Yeah.
You do a number of agency specific events where the IT personnel for specific agencies get together around very specific topics.
Right, and they need to discuss policy and determine where they're going with specific types of technology direction or how to deploy certain things or buy certain things or create certain types of solutions. So the whole idea is improve service to the taxpayer, do it in an efficient way, and if industry has a solution to do that, they need to find a place to tell government about it. And usually an event is the way that happens. Face-to-face relationships get developed, and that's how it happens.
Yeah, the underlying theme of this is where and how do you build those relationships, because without the relationships, nothing's going to happen. Carrie, back when you were selecting events for your VAR when you were VP.
Mm-hmm.
What were your basic criteria for selection?
First, it would be a lot about what does our vendor partner do? What event makes sense for them to be there? What audience is going to be there? Really trying to look at the history of the event. Have they done this before? What was attendance like? What was the feedback from the vendors, sponsors, and exhibitors? Because they'll be honest. They're not going to hold anything back.
Right.
So really just tapping into that and finding out, okay, is this really as good as everyone says, or has it fallen off, or is it still the popular show to attend? But just really making sure the right types of people would be there, and not just the people walking around stealing pens off your table.
Well, if the pens were there.
Yeah, if the pens were there. And the mints and the cups. But someone that will actually talk and engage with you, but not just there for an afternoon of fun.
I think what Carrie's touching on is a very important point, and that is a challenge to all the producers out there, and that's articulating value to the buyer of the service. And the service is at one level a marketing service that the trade show producers put together, or a conference producer puts together. So we need to make sure that we're able to articulate the marketing value. The challenge is, though, that the value to Carrie, as she's evaluating the ROI for her specific needs, different than the next booth over or the next exhibitor over, who may want to have a completely different set of objectives.
Mm-hmm.
So understanding that and making sure that we know both sides, and the attendees also have objectives while they're at the event, and the government participants also have objectives. So weaving those all together really is the secret sauce of making a successful event.
My guests today are David Powell. David's the COO of Federal Business Council, and Carrie Ray, president of Government Event. When we come back, we're going to pursue in more depth criteria for choosing events and the other types of events that are out there. I'm Mark Amtower. You're listening to Amtower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Government technology professionals should prepare to attend GovCom 2011, the new trade show featuring government audiovisual communication solutions at the Walter E. Washington Convention Center, November 1st and 2nd, featuring nearly 100 leading manufacturers and solutions providers showcasing the latest in audio, video, conferencing, collaboration, control systems, digital signage, and visual display technologies. GovCom will help government agencies and the military boost collaboration, enhance security, improve reliability, and cut costs. GovCom is your opportunity to see cutting-edge communications products, network with fellow technology professionals, and get valuable training from leading experts in government and industry. For more information and your free exhibits pass, visit govcom2mshow.org and use the code FED. That's govcomshow.org. GovCom is brought to you by Infocom International, the association representing the audiovisual industry.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
Arlington National Cemetery's current system of burial records is a hodgepodge of paper index cards, digital data, and scanned images. To create the cemetery's first unified database, the Army's deploying soldiers equipped with iPhones. They're photographing each and every headstone on the cemetery grounds, and analysts are combining those photos with existing records to create Arlington's first authoritative data source for burial sites. The first phase of the project is expected to be finished in October.
General Dynamics Information Technology is dedicated to providing the latest, highest quality information technology services and resources to help organizations meet their mission objectives. Large-scale IT systems and communications networks are the strategic and operational heart of defense, intelligence, civilian government, and private business. They require the expertise of a company that delivers results. General Dynamics Information Technology, information technology, and professional services. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
Lockheed Martin's Joint Air-to-Ground Missile. It's mature, it's capable, and most of all, it's ready. And so is Lockheed Martin's JAGM team, ready to hit the ground running with a design that closes all currently identified capability gaps. Ready with a team and industry partners who've worked together for over a decade. Ready with an unparalleled production track record, over 40,000 launchers delivered, and more than 70,000 missiles using the core technology for JAGM's Tri-Mode Seeker. Ready With active assembly lines, Lockheed Martin is uniquely positioned to immediately begin JAGM production. Ready, with the same commitment and people that make Hellfire the most trusted precision-guided weapon on today's battlefield. The Lockheed Martin JAGM team. Proven, capable, and ready. To learn more, visit lmjagm.com.
This audio puzzle is brought to you by CenturyLink Government. Identify the federal agency problem.
Am I number E enough? All the other information is way prettier. I look fat in this network, don't I?
The answer? Insecure data. With CenturyLink's comprehensive suite of security solutions, even your most sensitive data stays protected. For a free risk assessment, visit CenturyLink.com/federal.
Government IT executives, step into the past to start shaping the future. At this year's Executive Leadership Conference in Colonial Williamsburg, the American Council for Technology and the Industry Advisory Council's ELC Conference, October 23rd through the 25th, brings together government and industry leaders to address the acquisition, security, and human capital challenges you face in your increasingly mobile world. Register today at actgov.org. That's www.actgov.org.
What bills in Congress could affect your pay, benefits, and agency budgets? Federal News Radio's Bill Tracker follows them all. Find it at federalnewsradio.com, search term Bill Tracker.
Welcome back to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guests today are David Powell of the Federal Business Council and Kerry Ray of GovEvents. You can find David at fbcinc.com, and you can find Kerry at govevents.com. And if we haven't touched on this specifically, govevents.com is an aggregator for all events facing the government market. So yes. If you haven't been there, you can go sign up for a free newsletter and stay up on the events. You can go there and search specific regions, etc. You can do the same thing at FBC, because FBC events are not only all over the country, but in Europe as well. Did I miss any geographic there?
Oh, we're staying
primarily
CONUS at this point. It's there's
Hold
so
it.
Much
Last
going
year
on.
You went to Hawaii. Don't tell me.
Well,
you didn't.
CONUS plus Hawaii, of course, okay. And Alaska, but the 50.
Okay.
We're in the 50, but the issue is there's plenty of work to be done here in the continental and Hawaii and Alaska. So there's plenty of work here. There are a lot of events. There's a lot of buying activity, and there are a lot of government agencies that are looking for solutions here at home. So, and I know there are needs around the world as well. It's just there's plenty enough here to keep us busy and our customer base busy. So
there you go.
We're not opposed to going out to other places.
If the agency contacts you and says we want to do an event over in the UK, give me a shout, because I haven't been there for a year.
Right. Well,
you'll be
handing out badges at our event in the UK then.
Well, there you go.
We actually have, I want to say, 7 or 8 events in England right now that are being promoted on the site. Right. Belgium, huge.
Yeah.
Abu Dhabi, huge. So that side of GovEvents is picking up too. Majority are here, obviously, in the US. But.
Okay. It's funny you say Abu Dhabi, because we had a couple of requests at the Government Market Master Group on LinkedIn for people doing work over there who wanted to join the group. And so you just validated their entry. But let's get back to some of the events. When you were the marketing VP at these events, did size matter? Did the size of the events, was that part of the criteria?
You know, not necessarily. And David, I don't know how large your events are, but the majority are in agency events, right? You're going into the agency.
I'd say about a third are in agency.
Okay.
Two thirds are conference events around everywhere.
Okay. So not necessarily. It didn't have to be a big, huge event. It could be something that was very targeted to a certain technology, a certain agency. There, a lot of the vendor partners said, we want to be in this agency. We're all about the FBI or we're all about the CIA. And right. those were the ones that we would have to try and track down. Right. So
they are all agency driven.
Okay.
I will say that, but they're not all specifically in agency.
Mm-hmm.
And the challenge again is finding the right market. And if the market is a specific customer within the federal space, then identifying the locations or the events that reach that market in the right context. I mean, one of our biggest rules is don't put people in the wrong events. Make sure that the event matches the objective of the industry participant and also the government participant. Mm-hmm. There really needs to be a match there. Otherwise, it's not good for anyone. So we want to make sure that there's a match in that. But in terms of size of events, size really, back to you on this, Mark, size really in our world doesn't matter if it's the right event for the right reason. So if right. the right people are getting together, the size of the event really is irrelevant. Now, we do events that go up to, you know, 5, 7, 8,000 people or down to, you know, 100 or 200 people, but it's everywhere in between. It's really what is the business result that we need to accomplish with right. the event that matters in the event.
Right. Well, a number of my clients have leveraged the events that Carrie was talking about earlier, the in-agency tabletops, mm-hmm. and they still do that. And this is one of the oldest events that FBC has produced.
Right, yeah.
And
we still do
yeah,
plenty of those.
And they are extraordinary events if you target properly.
Right.
You know, and invariably I'll still get people calling saying, you know, these have been around forever. Do they still work? Well, you know, you just answered your own question.
Right.
Hello.
Right.
Well, in terms of traffic on the GovEvent site would be those shows.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, if you are targeting a, you know, go back to, book number one, my Micron story, you know, Micron was competing against Dell. And at the time, Gateway primarily as the direct producer of PCs. But they had mindshare in five agencies. So our go-to-market plan was to do every event in those five agencies, regardless of geographic location. They were able to grow their business very nicely.
Measurably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice measures.
It was a very, very good success story.
Yeah.
And but I think the key with in-agency events is that you don't approach those as though they're a bigger conference. It's a very mm-hmm. specific marketing program that you have to adopt when you go into those events. And it's not the same mindset from a marketing point of view as the larger, you know, huge traffic, big glitz, rah-rah type of show.
Right.
It's a small format, conservative, low mm-hmm. noise, low glitz type of event, where you might get random traffic that picks up pens and so forth, where that person doesn't have any specific connection to your product, but they know the people that do have a connection. So maybe you do want them marked swooping the four card holders into their bag because they're going to take them back and give them to the four people that actually
might
can influence
make the decision,
what,
right.
buying what you sell.
Right.
So there are, you know, I think the strategy for that type of an event is a very unique and targeted strategy as opposed to you know, the larger events that might be in a convention center or a bigger venue where you have much more foot traffic and a much bigger look at me type of presence.
Well, yeah, and when you have those larger events, you really need a lot of traffic to make the event look successful, because if traffic is moderate or even not moderate and you have a big event, you know, your vendors are going to feel very lonely.
Well, plus your ROI model tends to be more based on dollars for eyeballs or, you know, handshakes. Mm-hmm. I don't know what terminology is being used now, but dollars versus specific, you know, other micro marketing type of tactics, just because of the expense involved with the large event.
Yeah. Right. You're going after the masses at that point.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a product or service that's so targeted and such a little niche, that's not the big show's not going to be the right fit.
Well, the big shows tend to have bigger tickets that go along with them as well.
Absolutely.
Depending on where they are, you know, I don't think it's this way in D.C., but there's a couple of major federal hub cities where you are not allowed to carry in any of your own materials.
It's like that in a lot of buildings now.
Okay.
A lot of buildings.
Is it a security thing or a union thing or combination? Oh,
you're talking about like convention center.
I'm talking about New York specifically.
Well, if we're talking about large trade show venues, yes, you have to actually.
Thing.
That's a union thing, and you're absolutely you prepare to get some check. You get your credit card out, and you're gonna write some checks. But in terms of getting materials into federal buildings or doing events inside of agencies, yeah, there are strict restrictions on bringing materials into that type of facility.
Oh, and yeah, in the federal agency, certainly.
Right.
Okay, my guests today are David Powell, COO of the Federal Business Council, and Kerry Ray, President of GovEvents. And again, you can find David at fbcinc.com and Kerry at govevents.com. I'm Mark Amtower. You're listening to Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Protecting your liver. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. Early detection and treatment can help people beat viral hepatitis, which is a group of infections that affect the liver. In the United States, the three main forms are known as A, B, and C. In some cases, hepatitis can kill, but some people with hepatitis B or C can carry it without knowing. Dr. John Ward is director of the Division of Viral Hepatitis at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
CDC is particularly concerned that of the 3.5 to 5.3 million persons living with hepatitis in the United States, many, if not most, are unaware of it.
He says they could be unknowingly transmitting the infection to others. There are vaccinations against hepatitis A and B and highly effective treatments for B and C. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
Profile America, Monday, September 5th. This is Labor Day, a time to honor the nation's working men and women, and traditionally the end of the summer season. The observance has added meaning this year because of the high unemployment rate. The first Labor Day was celebrated in September 1882 in New York City. By 1893, more than half the states were observing the occasion, and noting the first Monday in September as a national holiday became law in 1894. In the U.S., more than 153 million men and women are in the labor force. Just under 10 million are self-employed, while nearly 6 million work at home. About 5% hold down more than one job, and 24% work more than 40 hours a week. You can find more facts about America from the U.S. Census Bureau online at census.gov.
Hi, this is John Gilroy, host of Federal Tech Talk here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Join me every Tuesday morning at 11 as I look at the world of high technology in the federal government. On Federal Tech Talk, I speak the language of federal CISOs, CIOs, and CTOs and get into the specifics for federal IT systems integrators. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 11 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
A major hurricane raises the obvious question, can our homes be better built to withstand violent weather? The answer is, of course, yes. But at what cost? Tim Reinhold, chief engineer at the Institute for Business and Home Safety, says with about a 2% increase in the cost of a new home,
you can certainly raise the level of strength of a typical house quite a bit because our connections are generally so poor between the roof and the walls and the foundation.
Reinhold says the key is strapping the roof trusses to the top of solid walls. His experiments with wind speeds of 110 miles per hour showed
the front door on the conventional house blew open. When that pressure got inside, the whole house came apart in 4 seconds, whereas the other house that was strapped together well stood there and didn't have any problems.
To find out more, go to www.nae.edu/radio. That's nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
From fiddle and foresters to dolphin trainers, federal employees have some pretty cool jobs. Check out our Cool Jobs in Government series at federalnewsradio.com. Search term Cool Jobs.
Welcome back to Amtower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guests today are Kerry Ray, president of GovEvents, and David Powell, COO of the Federal Business Council. All right, we were talking during the break. There's the persistent myth that live events are either dying or dead. Trade shows are dying or dead. Kerry, you brought up a statistic for companies putting info into GovEvents. Can
yes.
you share that?
Sure. We're averaging about 50 new events being posted to the site each week. So a good 200 a month. September alone, there's 165 events actually taking place. There are some webcasts and webinars included in that number. Mm-hmm. But a big part are the on-site live events.
Okay. And end of FY always has a spike in the events because there will be spending up until midnight, whatever your time zone mm-hmm. is, on September 30. David, any experience there? Do you?
Well, it does get busy, and it is harder to, I think, get the industry side attention during the month of September, just because they're busy writing orders, hopefully, because they've been successful throughout the year. But in terms of the number of events, we see the same thing, and the myth of live events fading out, we don't see it. I mean, we see increased activity as well. We look at it as that there's something inherently, you know, human about events that people need to connect at some point. That there's, even though there's a flurry of online activity and people connect via Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, all the social media, at some point they still have a need to get together face to face. For the most part, policy discussions, anything substantial needs to happen face to face. People need to look each other in the eye. And when you talk about buying or building trust relationships, that has to happen eyeball to eyeball, handshake to handshake. And there's just something very human about that. And I think the event, the live event, supports that. I know there are hybrid events that happen where travel restrictions really just prevent live people from getting together. And it's more of a functional issue than a I don't really want to get together issue, but when it's possible, people get together face to face. It's just the culmination of all this other activity, and it's what people want to do eventually before they make a commitment, take a next step, and do that sort of thing. I mean, I think people want to develop a relationship, and the developing of a relationship and a trust-based relationship has to have some sort of a personal interaction in there.
It's definitely just something tangible.
Human psychology. Yeah, and I think events supports that. And that's part of what drives events. I mean, the same thing was said back when the telephone was released, you know, when in the whatever 50s or something, they thought that, you know, people would stop meeting because the telephone was yeah. released. You know, it's anytime there's something new that comes out, that's really a tool. The tool that it serves is efficiency, or it creates efficiency, but the need for people to get together is still there.
You want to pick up on that?
I completely agree. And by the number of events that we are seeing and continue to see, that validates David's point. One issue that you did bring up, which I thought was interesting, which we're seeing a lot more of, is the trend of the online broadcasting to reach those that can't travel. They do have travel right. restrictions. Yeah. They don't have the per diem budget to actually fly out to Vegas for a 4 or 5 day show. So we're definitely seeing a new trend with that right. too.
Well, you also brought up something during the break that I found intriguing, and that is in December, you get a huge spike in federal government employees looking for the 2011 calendar because they need to submit the forms that they are required to submit for training and travel, et cetera. So,
absolutely, Mark. And I'm glad that you brought that back up. We do get a lot of inquiries in December saying, hey, we need to plan our next year's calendar. We need to turn this in. We need to get approval. So I think that's really important not only for the organizers out there to understand that, that you can't pull together an event in a month or two and expect a good turnout and expect to get good feedback from that. It's not going to happen. There is an approval process. This is the government we're talking about. This is going to take some time. Sure, sometimes you can get out on an afternoon and slide by a trade show.
Sure.
But for the most part,
if it's local.
Right, if it's local. For the most part, there you need to really plan this out. So I think that's really important for people to understand.
Okay. Dave, you run across that as well? Do you get a lot of federal inquiries late in the year?
We do. We try to plan our events as far out in the cycle as we can, and there is a cycling process with all the approvals and so forth. I mentioned in the last segment, a lot of our events are mission related. So when it is a mission specific event, anyone that is related to the mission tends to come to the event because just the context of the event drives them to that, and there are approvals associated with that because it's mission related. It speeds up the approval process. But that goes back to the point that we were making earlier about content and context for the event itself. The content and the theme of the event really drives the purpose of the event, and the purpose and content drives the attendance to the event. So there's a relationship between all of these things and the success and the overall success of the event.
But one of the cool things about using, you know, weaving in social media here is you can start sharing the content online and then sort of say, we're going to aggregate all of this at this event or this series of event. What are you seeing on that front, Gary?
Social media in the event world, I think, has been amazing. Just from getting the information out to the masses to begin with, setting up that anticipation about the event, really getting some interaction beforehand going on. You mentioned FOSSE earlier, their 35th anniversary. We helped them with the social media campaign right before. Tell us your favorite experience in the last 35 years about FOSSE. And Mark, you know, you participated in that as well. So that really just starts to get people excited about the event and thinking about the event. And then the actual event, the engagement during the event, the Twitter feeds, the hashtags, the trending, being able to just see that live of this is what so-and-so just said, and people commenting that aren't even at the event related back to that. So for me, I think that's just been a tremendous tool as a whole to really get messages out there. Even if people can't be there, social media has really made that an easy way for them to get the information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And communities already exist. And that's the thing. An event is usually the gathering of a community. The community already exists. The social media tool gives the community a way to connect prior to the event, during the event, after the event. And hopefully that community stays connected beyond the event and was probably well connected before the event. So the media, the social media gives everyone a way to stay in touch, and it does build buzz and helps get word out about the event.
Drive attendance.
Right. Some of the communities that we work in, though, social media is not popular and isn't a tool that's open for use. So, we need to rely on other communication methods, but for the general public, I think it definitely helps the event process. I don't think it's a replacement for the event itself, though.
No, absolutely not.
It supplements it.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. And I do think we'll see more of the use of technology during an event. And for exchange of information, I think we'll see less paper at an event. We'll see more trading of data at an event via technology and so forth, but it's going to be fun to watch.
Mm-hmm.
I moderated a panel at a knowledge management event a year ago, and it was cool because people were tweeting the audience. It influenced traffic between sessions. So our session, you know, I was there with three really brilliant women across civilian agencies, and all I did was throw out the questions they told me to ask them. But our audience grew as a result of the tweets. It was kind of neat to watch.
That is great. Yeah. That is great.
My guests today are David Powell of the Federal Business Council and Kerry Ray of GovEvents. When we come back, we are going to wrap up our comprehensive discussion on events. I'm Mark Amtower. You're listening to Amtower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Hi, this is David Gregory. Join me Sundays at 8 p.m. for Meet the Press right here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. That's right, the same great show you watch Sunday mornings on NBC, you can also hear on the radio. For more than 60 years, Meet the Press has featured headline-making interviews with world leaders and U.S. newsmakers, including every president since John F. Kennedy. Tune in each week to hear analysis, discussion, and review the week's political events from noted journalists and experts. Sunday nights at 8, right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
This is NIH Health Matters. I'm Joe Belinfi. Research funded by NIH shows protection for children younger than 3 years is the same, regardless of whether two doses of flu vaccine are injected by needle, inhaled through a nasal spray, or provided through one dose of each in any order. NIH's Dr. Anthony Fauci adds that the study also confirms something scientists suspected all along.
That the live attenuated is a little bit better than the inactivated, in the sense that it induces what we call T-cell responses, which might give an additional degree of protection against influenza.
The live attenuated vaccine is inhaled through a nasal spray. For details, visit www.niaid.nih.gov. Health Matters is produced by the National Institutes of Health, part of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
It's a case that began with an investigation called Operation 00. I'm Molly Halpern of the FBI, and this is Gotcha. The Chicago mob, known as the Outfit, and the Chicago Outlaw Motorcycle Gang formed an alliance which involved a crew of thieves. Special Agent Courtney Troutman.
Historically, the Outfit here has used outlaw motorcycle gangs to do a lot of their dirty work.
Anthony Volpendesto did some of that dirty work by stealing from about 40 homes and jewelry stores in Illinois, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Indiana.
There were stabbings. There were shootings, victims were hogtied and terrorized throughout these robberies.
The FBI, along with its law enforcement partners, were able to charge Volpendesto on a racketeer-influenced and corrupt organizations count using investigative tools such as informants. Volpendesto unknowingly helped investigators when during one robbery,
Anthony, prior to leaving the store, blew his nose in a tissue and it was left behind. His DNA was recovered from that tissue.
Volpendesto was sentenced to 15 years in federal prison. I'm Molly Halpern of the FBI, and this is Gotcha on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Amtower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guests today are Kerry Ray. Kerry is the president of GovEvents. You can find her at govevents.com. And David Powell, chief operating officer of the Federal Business Council. You can find David at fbcinc.com. All right, Kerry, during the break, you mentioned that there were how many different producers registered on the GovEvents site now?
Right now, we have 743.
743 producers.
Yes.
David, we've had this conversation before. Now, a lot of those are going to be contractors.
Absolutely.
Manufacturers selling into the government. So, you know, yes. Cisco probably produces its own events. Carahsoft obviously produces a number of events.
Yes.
You have your traditional producers who have been in the market for a long time, like FPC. but in that group, there's going to be some people who, let's call it politely, have limited experience doing events in and for this market. So one of the criteria that we've discussed, David, we've discussed this in a number of venues before, and Kerry will probably have this conversation again as well. The pedigree of the producer is critical for the participants in the event, both the government attendees and the, content deliverers or exhibitors, speakers, et cetera. So, Give me some other criteria that we really need, the attenders need and the exhibitors need. Where are we going here? I mean, how
743.
Yeah. That's a lot.
It's crazy.
It's crazy.
So
wow.
And just because you're new doesn't necessarily mean you're bad. You may have some history in the market. But if you haven't produced events before, my recommendation to anybody that calls is don't go.
Right.
You know?
If you're not familiar.
Yeah. If they have no history, don't be the guinea pig.
Mm-hmm.
Well, to answer your first question, Mark, the federal market specifically is a marketplace where relationships matter. And I know it's true in most marketplaces, but it's very true in the federal marketplace. And in the event business, they matter a lot. And so in terms of, you know, how do you sift through and how do you understand who to pay attention to?
Mm-hmm.
It tends to be people that you have worked with, that you've seen, that you trust, that you know. So time in the marketplace, results, reputation, those are all things that play a role in that. And in terms of relationships, I think just longevity and experience with a specific provider really are the best ways to tell.
I would agree. I would agree with that. Even if I look at the GovEvents traffic, the top 8, top 10 event producers in the government space, they're the ones that get the bulk of it. Yeah, there's a lot of people out there, but the big guys, the ones that know what they're doing, even if they're not huge organizations, that know what they're doing, they're the ones that get the traffic, get the registrants, get the exhibitors, get the sponsors.
Well, you have to have the credibility.
Yes.
You know.
Right. Well, and I think, too, if coming into the government space and you need to understand the market, you need to understand that you can't promote an event that's happening in 2 weeks and expect hundreds and hundreds of people to show up. It's not going to happen. So
right.
I see a lot of that. I see a lot of last minute events.
That's the, and David, you know, your experience there is what?
Well, I always go back to trust, Mark. I mean, and I know that we at FBC have events that come online somewhat at the last minute. We mentioned this before. They tend to be events that need to happen and the audience is already sort of built in to the event. It's just a matter of organization. So,
but when the agency's coming to you and say, help us put together
this. Right. But in terms of the event cycle itself, yes, there is definitely a timing issue there. But over time, trust has to be developed within a marketplace and within this marketplace. So a producer has to work extremely hard to maintain that level of trust. And people in the marketplace tend to, you know, be in the marketplace for a long time. This isn't a short-term market. The federal space is a long-term market. So people that have been in the market have been in the market for a long time. You see the same people, you talk to the same people. And over time, you develop an acuity and a sense for an understanding for who's out there and who the people are that you can trust.
Yeah.
And if you don't, there's somebody that knows and that you can talk to. You just
right.
ask
and
around.
There are major event producers that don't focus on the government market, but occasionally host events for this market. And I've not been to them, and I'm not going to name any of them. But again, when the people, you know, my clients or anybody else calls me or, you know, we're discussing this on social network, LinkedIn, my advice is if they're not full time focused here, there's probably a better event for you. Now, I'll take that back when it comes to groups like IFMA, the International Facilities Management Association. So if you're a facilities manager or building owners management association, IFMA and BOMA are the two biggies in that industry. There are a lot of government people who belong to those. There's government building, you know, PBS is probably in both public building service. But they focus on a very specific skill set, facilities management and facilities ownership.
Mm-hmm.
So their events are going to target very specific people in the government market on a regular basis, but it's not a government event.
Right.
So Right, so but there's some crossover.
But the market that that organization serves knows that organization. Yeah. They trust the organization. Mm-hmm. And when the event comes out, they know that it's an event that they can rely on so that there's trust built into the event itself. So when it's released on govevents.com, it actually gets traction immediately, and the audience that is supposed to know about it knows about it, and they come in and jump into the event right away. So in terms of your initial question about just promotion of events in the within the context of this huge volume of events, really, how do you rise above the noise? And I think that's the question. And the real determining factor is, who do you know? Who do you trust? Who do you like in the marketplace? And that is just a function of time in the marketplace, reputation, and taking care of your customers, whether they're on the government side or the industry side, over a period of time.
Well, it's ultimately that total relationship package. So they have a relationship with the event producer. Certain manufacturers, resellers, and government agencies are going to trust that producer. And we mentioned this earlier, again, between breaks, but I know your organization intimately, and a lot of your employees have been there forever. So their relationships with, you know, when I talk to a manufacturer or reseller, oh, yeah, yeah, you know, Gabe over at FBC is our guy. And, you know, I know Gabe.
Right.
You know, I'm going... And you've known them how long, you know?
Right.
Gabe's been at FBC longer than they've been at Company X.
So. Right, and he knows the marketplace, and he also knows the customer base, both on the government side and on the industry side. And he knows the issues that are going on in government. Yeah. And the same thing with the balance of our staff. And I would probably say that it's like that at other successful companies across the board. That's really part of the success
of the
equation.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That relationship's important, but if your event wasn't really good, they'd walk away anyway. So
absolutely. Yeah. But so you need to make sure that the
content
your event is good, that you help people understand the event, you understand the objectives for the event, and make sure that they have a great event.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
And if they don't, make sure that you make it right.
You got to make it right at the back end. Thank you both for joining me. You've been listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guests have been David Powell of the Federal Business Council, FBCINC.com, and Kerry Ray of GovEvents, GovEvents.com. This is not my day job. If you need to fine-tune your marketing program, a little late for end of FY, boys and girls, but for FY12, that's going to be a tough year. If you need to fine-tune that marketing program and get your ROI up, give me a call. You can find me at federaldirect.net. And remember, you have not been everywhere until you've been off center with AmTower.
You've been listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off Center, Monday afternoons at noon, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.
Tired of playing catch-up with the news? Stay informed all the time with the Federal News Flash. The Federal News Flash is a daily email from Federal News Radio that will bring you the latest news and information about the federal government and the federal contracting world. Find out about exclusive stories and interviews only heard on Federal News Radio. Sign up for the Federal News Flash at federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now. Mike Causey on Federal News Radio.
I would rather give an ostrich a pedicure than play this.
Your turn with Mike Causey, Wednesdays at 10 a.m. only on Federal News Radio. Check out Mike's column, The Federal Report, weekdays at federalnewsradio.com, or sign up to have Mike's daily column delivered directly to your email.
You know, they're probably going to find out in 20 years that carrying one of these in your wallet causes your buttocks to fall off.
Mike Causey on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.